Hello, Toasties! It is the 10th, can you believe it, 10th episode of Pyro Toast Talks, and to celebrate, we are offering a 10% discount on subscriptions to our podcast. Get excited! It's going to cost 10% less than usual.
But it's free.
10% of free is still free.
Anyway, we've been doing this for what feels like 10 episodes worth of podcasting, and tonight we are talking about pricing, and you can trust our pricing knowledge because we give this away for free, so clearly we know what we're doing. I don't have too much else to say about that. I am David. This is Renee. Say hi, Renee.
Hola.
And we're with It's David and Renee, and on the other side of the internet world is Brian and Zona from BZ Furfur. Say hi.
Hi.
Howdy.
Great. And I have once again started another podcast with an introduction unlike any of the other ones I've done.
You never let us down. It's always a roller coaster.
It is always 100% energy, 0% planning.
Well, yeah, if you script it too much, then it's like a little too robotic. But if you're just like, if you're just going, if you're winging it.
So we were excited to bring everyone the deep secret details of the capital T spreadsheet, capital S TM of BZ Furfur as we discuss pricing, because we hear that that spreadsheet is really their third man. Without that spreadsheet, there is no business. So let's hear more about it.
I guess you should start off with just describing what it is. What is the spreadsheet?
So back when we had started BZ Furfur, we were selling mostly on Etsy. And when we were selling on Etsy, we had purchased some kind of a spreadsheet that integrated with Etsy. You would export the data that you would, your sales data from Etsy, and then you'd import it into the spreadsheet. And it worked really well for what we were doing. But then we started moving away from Etsy. We started moving away from selling product and started moving more towards selling custom pieces, individual pieces, art pieces, things like that. And as we started to do more of that, we realized that we started needing to track more closely how much we were spending in materials, how much time was being put into individual pieces, how much materials we had on hand, how much inventory we had, that we had all of these kind of different data points that we needed to keep track of. And there really wasn't, we searched online, we really couldn't find like a spreadsheet that was good for us. So I happen to be
love spreadsheets. He loves them.
I don't love them. I've worked with them for a really long time. I was in like actuarial in finance for years.
It was part of your job.
It was a big part of my job. So I'm very comfortable working with spreadsheets, working with formulas and spreadsheets. So what I started to do was just kind of talked to Zona about what was important in terms of pricing her product and what kind of material. So the way that the spreadsheet is organized, it has tabs for every type of product, so like paints and finishes and wood. And so anyway, I wrote down here, so we talked about what was important for the business, like what it was that kind of drives our cost,
right?
And that's what we started with. And the main part of the spreadsheet is where Zona is able to pick, she'll kind of select what the different materials are that she's using for a particular piece, and then how much of that material she's going to use, and how many hours that she's put into that piece, and it's going to calculate how much the cost of that piece should be. So if she's using a $10 piece of wood, and she's using a $20 can of paint, and that paint can give her say 10 pieces, then it's $2 worth of materials for paint, and then, you know, 50 cents worth of sealant. And then we have kind of this base number. And that's really helpful, especially if we say, you know, well, how many hours did you put into this? I put 10 hours into it. And then you kind of come up with a price for how much you think your time is worth per hour. And this is, I think, the hardest part about the spreadsheet. And Renee, I'm sure that you probably struggle with this as well, is determining how much your time is worth. Mm-hmm. Because it's very easy. It's very easy to put a price on actual physical materials because you're actually paying money for them. How do you determine how much your time is worth? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say, you know, just come up with a random number and say, all right, well, $15 an hour. But $15 an hour is not really a lot of money for the amount of skill and talent that you have that you're using for your projects. But if you go too high and you say, all right, well, then I think it should be $40 an hour, and you have a 10-hour project that has $50 worth of materials, and you're now looking at a $450 piece. And then you have to question whether or not you feel comfortable charging that amount. And I think that's where it gets a little bit hairy. What were you going to say, David?
I was going to say, we should maybe zoom out for just a second and I guess discuss first off, like, what is the base kind of formula that you and Zona are using for your pricing structure? So are you doing like cost of materials, cost of labor, and adding a little bit? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's cost of materials, mm-hmm. right? And then it's cost of labor, and then it's kind of the squishy part, right? It's, you know, all right, so the cost of those two things comes to $250. So I'm going to charge $300 for this piece.
Okay.
Because you have to take into consideration, and this is one thing that we don't do with the spreadsheet. We don't take into consideration the cost of markets, the cost of mm-hmm. marketing, the cost of electronic assets, so your website, your any fees that you have to pay for mm-hmm. Selling online, shipping, taxes, stuff like that.
Materials for shipping.
So all of that stuff is, I mean, I guess you kind of take the, when you charge shipping and handling, I guess that kind of.
Okay. Well, I think we need to zoom out just a little bit more. He created the calculator page on the spreadsheet calculates exactly that. It'll calculate the cost of materials. So I would put in whatever material it is from a previous page, from a different page, and that will, it'll already have it calculated, like the amount, what it is and how much it cost. The hanging materials, right? I'll have already divided it on a different page. Like, okay, sawtooth hangers cost blank amount for each one. I bought a pack of 100 and it costs $7.99. So it'll calculate how much one single sawtooth hanger is.
Right.
Or, you know, the hanging wires or whatever. So that's already calculated out on a different page. So on the main calculator page, I would just highlight the material, put that in, and then at the end of it, it'll calculate how much
the sum of everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's like the cost of materials and like baseline materials. That doesn't include paint and varnishes. That's a different section. Or how I've colored it. Because I have a section for colors also. So if I use handmade watercolors, or I use the Art of Soil colors, or the colored pencils, or whatever it is, that's also on a different page. And I've kind of... It gets dicier when you're talking about like using colored pencils or handmade watercolors, right? Because it depends on the size of the pen and how much you're using that color for,
right.
for, you know, for that piece.
Right.
So it's a little,
it's not perfect. Looser.
It's not. Yeah. It's not, but it's, I mean,
you're taking an educated guess at what
yes.
everything is.
Right. And I mean, that's something that you figure out in time in terms of how much you use it. Right. Me and you, we like to do vibrant and opaque when we use our handmade watercolors. Mm-hmm. So we probably use more than, let's say, someone who uses it for highlighting or like as a wash or whatever.
Right. Like I just used half of a pan for that mandala that I was doing, that I was working on, mm-hmm. that giant mandala. I used over half a pan, and that was like one of the expensive pans. It's like a $10 pan.
Right. And yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing, because it also depends on like what brand it is that you're using.
Oh, yeah.
And then what color it is, because we also know that depending on the brand, some colors, just for whatever reason, we just go through an entire pan where in another color from the same brand, not so much. Mm-hmm. And we're using the essential, quote unquote, like we're coloring the same amount.
And I think, I mean, you can get really specific and you can weigh your paint before and after you do a piece and try to figure out how much of it you use.
That's too much for me.
I mean, you could be working on more than one piece at a time. You know, they could be sharing the same paint across them. It's really hard to get the very specific granular details that you need to calculate that. I personally think the best way to do it is you capture that information over time. All right, I bought lacquer 2 months ago, and I've made three pieces that use that lacquer, and I'm almost out. So maybe at can of lacquer costs $15. So I will assume going forward, anytime that I'm going to use that lacquer, I can get about four pieces out of it. So 15 divided by four, and that's how much I'm going to charge for materials for anything that uses that particular product.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of sealant, right? Because that comes in a can, like let's say it's a gallon. I break it down into like ounces, and then I measured, like I literally measured one piece, an average size piece, how many ounces of lacquer I used for that piece once. Like I legitimately did. And then it was just like, okay, well, this piece took 2 ounces of lacquer-ish, right? Give or take. So the next time I seal something, I can say, okay, well, this probably took 2 ounces. It probably took four. So that's kind of like the baseline. And then I'll just kind of guesstimate how much it is, how much lacquer I've used. It's just dicier when it's like something you can't, like, how do you measure a colored pencil?
Right.
Like, how do you measure, like, even though handmade watercolors, like, let's say you didn't use a whole pan, you used maybe a quarter of a pan, maybe an eighth, maybe a 16th. Like, are you going to sit here and like measure it? You're not, no. Right? So you kind of guesstimate.
Yeah. You have to like kind of step back and look at the big picture and be like, how much of it guesstimating based on these factors, and then just go from there. Because you would drive yourself absolutely crazy if you had to actually quantify everything.
Right. So like when it comes to the colors, especially the coloring stuff, I bought a set, of colored pencils, and let's say that was a $50 set of colored pencils. I colored the entire piece, and it's just throwing out numbers, a 12 by 14 piece. Okay. And I used colored pencils for it. I used mostly colored pencils. I'm going to say, okay, let's say that was like $2 or $3-ish worth of colored pencils.
Sure.
Right? And I just kind of base it on that, or I might, you know, just adjust the numbers as needed when it comes to that. The things that are easily measured, like the lacquer, any sealants or resin or whatever, something that actually has a measurement, I try to get a little more detailed with that, but I'm not going to sit here and go absolutely bananas on most of the stuff.
Nor do I think you need to. I think you can.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think you can make some rough estimates, you know. Mm-hmm. Colored pencils, all right. So how often do you replace your colored pencils? Mm-hmm. Once a year? All right. How much does a thing of colored pencils cost? $25? All right. So let's just assume that any time that you're using colored pencils, you know, you take some percentage of that $25, and that's how much you incorporate in for materials.
Well, that's
the best
said,
you
like,
can do.
That's why I said kind of guesstimate. Let's just say it's like $2.
We don't do anywhere near this level of granularity. And I'm just curious, do you feel like it beneficial from an accounting standpoint, or is it more just kind of like you feel better being confident in your prices because you've got data behind it?
I was going to say before Brian, is like you said you could sit there and drive yourself bananas, but I think some people would listen to this and say you already are bananas for doing it so detailed, because so many people are not doing it to this. Like, I'm not, I could, but I have absolutely zero desire to. I just ballpark it and write it down on a sticky note, if that.
I mean, and that's fine. I said again, for most of it, I'm just ballparking it anyway, right? Like, I'll put in, like, the major things that I'll put in are the wood and any hardware, especially if it's like, if I'm using the D-rings and wire, mm-hmm. right? Because that's, you got a package and that costs a certain amount, so you really should be being a little more determinative of how much that is that you're using. But, you know, like, then I'll go down the rest of the page and I'm like, oh, sealant, let's say it was 2 ounces, you know, and I have no idea if it's actually 2 ounces. And then it's just like coloring. Okay, well, I use like 4 different colors.
A dollar.
I'll say like,
A dollar. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, I guess back to David's question. Do you feel like tracking it to this extent for you is just helpful in, like, coming up with your pricing, or, like...
You could say extreme. It's okay.
Extreme.
For me personally, it does.
Okay.
To some degree, because it's just, like, you still have to cover the cost of everything, right? Like, right, again, right. It's not definitive. Like, if you sat here one day, don't know why you would ever want to do this, but like if you sat here at the end of the year one day and you like legitimately calculated every single piece of wood, every ounce of sealant that you used, every single like color that you used, and you like really, 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 really went crazy on that, I mean, that number should be close to what you're charging plus profit, right? Mm-hmm. Theoretically, are we getting down to that? No, we're not. We're legitimately ballparking a lot of like the nebula stuff.
Well, yeah. let's hop in the old DeLorean here. We're gonna go back to 2020, back when we were all wearing masks and hiding in our houses.
I don't want. Why are we going here?
Why are we going there?
We're going back in time.
I don't want to go there.
It's a terrible time.
We're just going temporarily. No. We're just going. We're coming right back.
I know where his purpose is.
We'll come right back.
No.
All right. So, back when we started the business, we would price things and have absolutely no idea how much we should charge for something.
Yeah.
We may buy a set of coasters for $3 and then say, okay, let's charge $15 for these coasters because they cost $3, so $15 sounds like a good amount. And this piece is bigger. We paid $8 for this, so maybe we should charge $25 for this one.
Okay.
But the things that we didn't take into consideration were those coasters might have taken twice as long to do. Those coasters may have needed a more expensive sealant because they needed to be waterproof and or water resistant and heat resistant. Maybe that larger piece was on a piece of wood we spent $20 on it, but we also cut that piece down and we ended up getting 4 slabs out of it. So all of those things factored into the price, but we didn't really think about it. So we really had no confidence at all in what we were charging.
I think we in the beginning, back in 2020, when I was vomiting because, oh my God, we started a business.
Uh-huh.
I looked at a piece and said, okay, well, how much would I pay for this? Ooh. And that's like, I did that in the very
that's
beginning.
That's so
and
it bad.
Like, it is. It absolutely is.
We should
is.
Talk about that right. here in a minute. Yeah.
We should. And it's just like, so I looked at it and I said, okay, well, I wasn't very confident in my skills at that point. I wasn't taking into the consideration how much, like, I was using expensive colorant, like paint, to paint it. Right? Mm-hmm. Not taking into consideration that it's more expensive than, let's say, the Dollar Tree stuff, for instance. Right? And I was just like, okay, well, I'm going to look at this. I think I would pay $15 for this. Mm-hmm. But then when you break it down, right, you've got the cost of the wood was actually $5. Then the cost of the sealant was, even for an ounce, was like $5. Right? And then you've got the price of the paint that I used, which was also actually $5. So that's $15 right off the bat. Right. I didn't even calculate how much time I put into it. and how much, like, any of that factored in. So at the end of it, when we looked at that, it said, well, we charged $15 for it. Yes, we paid $5 for the materials for, like, just the coaster, but we didn't factor in anything else. So we actually lost. We were losing money. Mm-hmm. We were basically doing it for free.
Yeah.
Right? So
it's an expensive hobby at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. So having that in the spreadsheet to look at a number for us is helpful because it's like, again, it may not be like on point perfection, but it's a really good indication. Like, okay, well, we calculate how much time it took me to do it and the materials and all of the materials and all that that means. And let's say it costs baseline $50. Okay. How much do we want to charge for this piece? And it costs $50, right? We have a better idea of how much to charge now.
It forces you to think about the cost. It forces you to think about how much each material cost you. It forces you to think about how much time you put into it. And when you actually go to sell the piece, it actually makes it easier to present that piece for the price that you're offering it at. Mm-hmm. I have spoken to people many times who have said, my God, why is that piece so expensive? And my answer is, well, it took her 12 hours to make this piece. And mm-hmm. that piece of wood that it was made on is, you know, a piece of finished cherry that, you know, was finished by a master craftsman in Pennsylvania. And
who?
Master craftsman.
I will definitely throw David's name out there as a master craftsman. So we really gives us an easier talking point as it applies to how much these pieces are costing the consumer. And I personally find it really helpful. If we were still just kind of ballparking the numbers, I mean, ballparking some of the costs of some of the materials is fine, but if we were ballparking the entire cost, I think we'd be underselling ourselves.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I was going to say the same thing, because, like, something that we haven't even touched on yet is just the cost of overhead of running a business. Like, not even materials. It's the upkeep of the ink in your printer. It is, do you have rent? Do you rent a space? Do you have employees? Are you paying a salary? Like, if your business suddenly, like, let's say your burner suddenly goes out, do you have enough in the account to turn around and buy a new burner, like, for the unexpected expenses kind of thing? Like, there is just so much that you can't even calculate, like the wear and tear on your computer, your mouse, like your glasses, like your literally everything. It's just like, I don't know, I always think about big box stores in this kind of sense. Like Old Navy has clothes, but they're not just trying to cover the cost of manufacturing the clothes. They got to pay for the warehouses. They got to pay for the shipping. They got to pay their employees. They're paying salary. They're paying work claims. They're paying insurance. You know, like, holy shit. All there's things. Just so much more than even just the cost of the materials. Like,
oh, absolutely.
The cost of the materials is the bare minimum.
Exactly.
Bare minimum. And then, like, maybe, like, triple that to cover all the other costs.
I mean, like think about it. Our vehicles, our cars.
Our cars, our tires, the oil change. Like,
all the gas, insurance.
Exactly.
Maintenance. You know, just cleaning the car, because we all know that we have to clean the car because it gets nasty sometimes. You know what I mean? It's like all those things that we don't immediately think of.
Yeah.
Like, for me, honestly, this spreadsheet is it gives me the least amount of stress because I could just plug in numbers.
Yeah.
And then, like, it almost calculates itself for me. So that's one less thing that I'm going to stress out about when it comes to that, right? Because let's put that aside now. Now we've got all the other things that we're stressing out about.
Right.
Okay, we got insurance. We got car insurance that needs to be paid in 6 months. How much is that? Okay. Then we've got, like, oh, don't forget gas and, like, And if we go someplace that's like, that we need to spend the night at a hotel, we need to rent a hotel room.
Yep.
Then you've got your food.
Do you have the money in the business account for that?
Exactly. Right. And you know, and it's just like, or what about the, if there's a class that could be really beneficial for you that you really think could up your game, right? Or extend your knowledge or polish off the knowledge of the crafts that we do, right? You want to take that class. Do you have the money in the account
right.
for that? Did you account for that?
Right.
Right. It's all these little things that it's just like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
An accountant at the end of the year. Unless you're doing the taxes yourself, you've got an accountant that you've got to think about.
Yep.
You've got to pay off. You've got lawyers also if, you know, in the very beginning, excuse me, when
your lawyer fees, yep.
Then you're starting it off or something else comes up that you might need to hire a lawyer. You know what I mean? Like, oh, crazy.
Yeah.
You said in the beginning that it the spreadsheet is our third employee. And I think it's kind of funny because the spreadsheet is kind of like the bad guy. We can blame him. Oh, you know, this piece is expensive. Yeah.
The spreadsheet told me.
The spreadsheet told me.
I'm not responsible for the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet has a mind of its own. Like, listen, man, it tells me what to do and I just do it.
So, I mean, like, so back to answering your question, David, does it help us when we're pricing? Does it give us more confidence? It does. For us, it does. It gives us a better starting point on price, mm-hmm. on how much we want to charge for this piece.
I feel like it would be really helpful for you guys with your custom orders too, because then you can give a good mm-hmm. quote. We don't do a lot of custom, like me art wise. If anything, we get more wood orders for the shop, but art wise, I don't hardly get any customs. So when I get someone who's like, can you give me a quote? I just can kind of compare it to things that I've done in the past, but I don't have a formula. But for you, you do a lot of customs. So I feel like it's helpful for that. No?
Yes.
Yes.
I kind of do what you do in terms of like when someone asks for a custom, a lot of the time it's for something that I've already done. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, for instance, the dad's grill. Okay. Well, I know how long it takes me to do a dad's grill, and I know how much the cost of materials is. So that price is just going to be your price. I don't generally charge more for a custom for that, right? If we're talking like a whole brand new custom, listen, I need a sign that's going to be this big and that, and I'll send you the picture of what I want it to look like, this, that, and the other. That's when I will go to... I will use the calculator and I'll be like, okay, send me what you got and I will give you a quote afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to always give a quote on the spot.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, oh, well, you said that it was going to be this much. I said, no, I said in this price range. No, what you said was, you know, and I don't want to get into that conversation with them. Plus, I also seem to weed out the... I'm not really serious about a custom order. People by doing that, because I will take their name, number, and I'll reach out to them from the order form, and I'll be like, okay, well, this is what we discussed, and this is I looked it over, and da 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 da, and this is the price.
Right.
Dead silence. Then I get dead silence. That's fine. I will reach out one more time and I'll be like, hey, I'm just following up on that, you know, on our previous conversation. Custom order. And then dead silence. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to reach out to you again because I'm not going to beg you for an order and I'm not going to hound you for it. But I did my due diligence, if you will. But that's how I tend to weed out the not, I'm not serious.
I think one thing that helps with that, though, is generally when somebody's coming to talk about a custom order, we have pieces around and we can show them a piece and say, well, a piece like this, this piece costs $200. Mm-hmm. And that's how much you would pay for a piece that's about this size on this type of wood that's about this complexity. So it gives them some sort of a gauge because I think people need that. People mm-hmm. need at least a gauge for where it's going to be. And when you're showing them another piece and giving them a price of a different piece, you're not saying that this is how much you're going to pay. You're saying this is how much you would pay if you were buying this piece that was right here. So I think it helps a little bit, because I think sometimes people will shy away a little bit after that. Whereas we've had other people who'd say, oh, yeah, that sounds about right. And then you know when somebody doesn't bat an eye at the price for something that you feel is a reasonable price for the work that you've done, you know you're working with somebody who's going to be good to work
with. That's a good customer. You want that customer. Yeah.
Exactly.
I try to emphasize the, it might be around this price range, but I won't know until I see the pattern that you want, until I see the price of the wood and see what's available. I stress that, and I will say that a couple of times throughout the initial conversation, because I want them to understand that, like, okay, I might be quoting you a rough guesstimate of, let's say, $300, but that depends. You're talking about you want this specialty wood that I may or may not be able to get, and then my supplier will have a price. I can't change that price from the supplier.
Right.
But let's say I can possibly get it for $100, but I go there and it's, they've upped the price to, let's say, $200. Well, that's just going to up the final price by $200, by $100. So that piece, that map that you want, that I'm pricing at $350 right now, you want the exact same wood, but now it's up in price because the materials are costing more.
Right.
But I tell them.
Yeah, it's all about managing the expectations at the beginning. Like, yes, listen, this price will fluctuate.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. About managing expectations. Because the last thing I want to hear is, but you said,
right,
that wasn't what I said. I didn't guarantee you a price.
Yeah.
I said that it could be this price. And again, I'm talking about like real custom order, something that like I don't already have on hand that I haven't made before. Brand spanking new, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because then I don't have a guesstimate price for how much it's going to be. Like I said, like with something like the Dad's Girl, which I've made a few times, I already know how much materials is going to cost and the time it takes and everything. So that price is set. It doesn't matter. Not that it doesn't matter. It won't fluctuate. I don't have to worry about, ooh, well, if my supplier going to have this, can they make this? You know, how much are they going to charge me to make this thing?
So I have a question for y'all.
Okay.
And that is, in addition to pricing, do you do any sort of discounting? So do you do, like, if you buy, I know we've got some friends who will do, if you buy two or more pieces, we'll give you 15% off your entire order. Or for us, we have certain pieces where if you buy two or more, we give a discounted price on them. Or if you do like online, like discount marketing, promo codes, or any sort of kind of marketing things where you discount things. I know that you do Timberdoodle stuff where certain people who are part of your program get discounts.
Yeah.
How do you handle that? How do you kind of resolve that with the overall cost of doing business?
Okay, great questions. The first thing for anyone listening, if you are trying to make money with your business, you have to make money with your business. So if you run a sale, but that sale means you're not actually going to make any money, then no, don't run this. You have to be able to afford to run the sale. So when we were first starting out, that was something that we were thinking of, like, do I ever have sales? Like, but our pricing at the very beginning was so off and just so, you know, just uneducated. We just didn't know what we were doing, right? Like, if we ran a sale, we were actually losing money because we weren't building in any kind of profit into our stuff. I was just looking at, this is the price, this is the time we put in, this is the price. And if I put it on sale, I'm actually going to lose money on it. So it just doesn't make sense to run a sale if you're going to lose money on it. That means that your pricing is wrong and you need to relook at it from a business perspective. That being said, now the first sale thing that I'm thinking of is we offer free shipping on orders over $60. And that's not just Timber Doodles. That's any order on our website, which mostly is Timber Doodles because that's who's mostly shopping on our site. But if we had a normal non-Timber Doodle customer come onto the site and, you know, want to buy some wood, they would still get that too. The way we're doing that is we basically are paying that shipping out of our profit. So like we are actually making less money on those orders, but the guarantee of having a $60 order, we don't have crazy profit margins on our stuff. Like we don't have 85% profit margin. Like we put a little bit of a profit margin on top of David's labor and sanding and then whatever time it takes me to like do marketing side of things, you know, take pictures, get it on the website, all of that stuff. We don't have a crazy profit margin. You think of like Old Navy again, a pair of jeans probably costs them $2 to manufacture and they're selling them for $60 a pair. Like, we don't have that kind of profit margin. We don't feel good about that. Like, that's just not who we are. We're not trying to like price gouge people. So when we say here's a sale, a lot of the times we are actually taking that out of whatever profits we would be getting. And some people might say that that's not like a great business model. You know, we're losing money that way. Don't do that. But like, we're not actually losing money. We're just not making as much money when we offer those sales. You want
to? I'll give you a peek behind the curtain on the shipping, free shipping thing. So it is the trade-off is using a little bit of customer psychology. We look at what our average order cost or average order value was, and it was sitting around $50. And then you say, well, we know we're losing some orders because people get to the end and they see the cost of shipping added on and they don't like it. Customers don't like it. Everybody hates it.
If you have, you know, a $50 cart and then you go to shipping and it's another $13, that just doesn't feel good. Like,
that is definitely something that is going to make somebody go,
right.
Do I really want this stuff?
And then we have these abandoned carts and we can see that on our end in our site.
Okay, really?
Yep, we can see exactly what was in the cart. We can see timestamp. We can
Zona.
No.
Hey.
If they already
do I have an abandoned cart?
No, you don't.
Oh. I'm like, we do.
No, he's just messing with you. We can see exactly the customer information. We can see the timestamp on when they left the cart. You know, we don't do this, but we could. We could program Shopify to send like cart reminders and like I think it sends one automatically, but we don't have we don't do our email marketing through Shopify, so we don't send out those we were noticing that like our abandoned carts looks like they get to shipping and then they're like, F it, I don't want to pay that, and then they don't. So it's like, okay, we're losing orders. What if we bumped it to 60 but then we ate the shipping?
Yeah, you interrupted my explanation.
I'm sorry take it back.
So the trade-off here is you find your average order value and then you want to make a little bit of extra money and entice people with free shipping. And so our average order value was $50, and so we set our free shipping limit at 60. It encourages people to shop over what they were shopping, so we're getting it a little bit of extra business, and it covers the cost of shipping and a little bit of change. It pushes people past what the cost of shipping actually was for most cases, and we get an extra little order boost, because otherwise we're potentially giving away product for free. But yeah, so that's the idea, is you set it slightly higher to trick, for lack of a better word, to reward customers for shopping up to that limit. But you can't set it right at your mean order value, otherwise you'll start losing money.
I think also another little tidbit of customer psychology is if you put free on anything, people are going to stop and go, ooh, what now? Free. How do I get something free? Because it says free, right? Also, the whole bundle thing. This item is this amount, but if you get two, you get this amount, and people will automatically do the math. Okay, well, if this was $10 for one piece, but if I get two, it should be $20, but I'm really going to pay $17, I'm saving $3.
Right.
It's that whole math, that instantaneous math, that's just like, oh, well, then if I get two, I can keep one and give the other one as a gift, and I only spent $7 on this gift.
Right?
Like... But that's part of the psychology. Yeah. But you do have to build it into the price that you're charging to begin with, and
well, like
the what you're charging people.
Well, let's talk about earrings for a minute. So Zona recently started making earrings for the business, which I think has been a great idea, because a lot of times people come in, they really like her pieces. They can't afford her pieces, but they can afford a set of earrings. And since they're hand-burned and they are the same style, they kind of have the same look, she can charge a lower price point for them. So it's a great way to convert those people who come in to take a look at the art into sales when normally they wouldn't have been sales. What we've done with those is the earrings themselves, we could probably get away with selling them for like $12.
Yeah, how about we not?
Right.
Don't give them too much of a peek behind the curtain.
Well, no, I'm just saying, you know, right. Like we could probably get away with selling them for, you know, for $12. And
but are
you know,
covering
you kind of
all your expenses with a $12 margin or a $12 limit?
Depends on the piece, right?
Yeah. So, well, in terms of the earrings, I think if we charge $12 for it, like, that's breaking even.
Mm-hmm.
But if we charge $15 for it, we have, you know, we get a larger profit. But if somebody's going to buy three and we give them, you know, three for $35, that comes to about $12 a piece. Now you have a... We're making a smaller profit, but we're making three sales.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's like it's kind of you have to weigh it, right?
Yeah.
Is it worth making that extra sale or those extra two sales and to give them that discount versus also you might make up for it, because a lot of people just don't want to buy two or three. So they'll just buy the one at the higher price point, knowing that they're spending more money on it just because they only want one, or they don't want to spend more than $50.
Oh my gosh, I have a funny story about that. David's uncle, our local gas station sometimes has like a 2-for-1 deal on like their ready-made hot dogs or whatever. And so, but he went in one day and he just wanted one hot dog. He didn't want the second one for free or whatever, but they wouldn't give him just the one. And he's like, I don't want the other hot dog. Like, I don't want it. I just want one hot dog. Like, I'm not going to eat it. And they're like, sir, you have to have it. It's the 2-for-1 deal. I can't just sell you one hot dog. Like, it was a whole thing. I just think that's so funny. So funny.
That is funny. That is funny, but I was like, that's just weird that they're just like, no, you have to. We're going to give you.
We're giving you this extra hot dog. You have to take it. It's so funny. I just think it's so funny.
Take it. That's odd on a business level. Like,
I know though. Like, just
making him take it.
Take like just what? I know. It's silly. But going to back to your point about the making three sales instead of one, Brian. I'm kind of thinking about that right now with my wooden spoons. So we have a show coming up this weekend, and I have made like 25 wooden spoons with little mushroom guys on them, and they are adorable. And I'm pricing them individually, $20 a spoon, but I'm also putting together some sets of two for $35.
You can't do that.
But it's not going to be two for 30. Okay, so we can't do that at this show because the minimum price on your item is $20, and it says like everything in your booth has to be at least $20, and you can't have like 2-for-1 deals to skirt it. Okay, so I can't put like 2 for $35, but I can put together a set and bundle it together and price it $35. This is one item of two spoons for $35. So that's...
That's a different sale. That's just a different sale. I mean, it's not. That's what we do with our. That's what we do with our spoon with our sets. Like we have it. It's a set of four, and like if they had wanted one, because we've had somebody ask, "Well, I want just this particular spoon or fork or whatever," and it's like, "Okay, well, the set we're selling the set for like $40. You know, one spoon would be $12, for instance, if they had just wanted the one. But the set is $40.
Yeah. Like this set, this set is, I mean, I have five sets of two spoons and they have different mushroom designs on them. And they're two different kinds of spoons. So one's like a flat spatula, the other's a curved spoon. And those are my sets. Those are going to be $35. And I guess if you wanted to look at it as two for $35, but that's not how I'm marketing it. That's not what the price tag says. Like, these are going in my inventory as sets of spoons, not individual spoons for you to pair up. And they're not going to be allowed to be like, oh, can I swap out the spoon for that one? Because, like, no, you can't take the set apart. The set is the set, you know? So... But anyway, I'm thinking about that, and it's like, I would rather, like, if I could do the 2 for $35, let's just say I could do the 2 for $35 and not have to worry about the sets. Like, I would rather make a little bit less, like, quote, make a little bit less. I'm making profit on the spoons individually, and so... In theory, if you're buying two, I'm making double the profit, but I'm willing to make a little bit less in order for that customer to be satisfied, for that customer to feel like they got a deal, to feel like this is a good quality product and this was a really good price. Like, now maybe this customer might follow me on socials, or like they might even come back the next day, you know, like pleasing the customer and giving them a little bit of like a feel good edge in their purchase is how you retain the customers and how they're going to remember that you. Exactly, like you don't necessarily want them to think of your stuff as cheap. Like, oh my gosh, this one girl at the show, her stuff was so cheap. Like, that's not exactly the reputation that I want, or like, that's not how I want to be remembered. I just want people to feel like they got a good deal on something that they really wanted, and it was a good price, and they're happy with it, and they might shop my website, you know, for Christmas now or something. So I feel like that's the trade-off there. It's like, well, I'm not really losing anything by taking off the $5, other than I'm just not making $5.
I mean, and I think that is good business, right? Because a happy customer is more likely to come
to return to you, right? Yep.
Right. You're more likely to have a return customer if they are happy, if they're happy with dealing with you, if they're happy with the price, you know, they're more likely to come back and maybe buy another set of spoons, or, you know, buy a different item, or, you know, in my case, it'd be like, oh, well, their prices are pretty good. Maybe I'll order a custom order this time. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, because they don't charge a crazy amount of money for this item.
I just feel like it's like a fair trade. You know, I'm willing to knock the price off a little bit in order to have like a better customer base.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's also, this is not something we do on art. We would only do this on product.
On product.
Because like, if we're selling an art piece, like one of Renee's big pieces, we don't want any association with, like, we want the customer to know that all of that dollar value is worth it. And if you start, we feel like if you start discounting or playing games with the price of those big art pieces, all you're doing is underselling your art and devaluing the art
for what it actually is worth. Yeah,
we've negotiated some prices here and there.
Have you?
I mean, you know, I think that there's pieces that, you know, sometimes they haven't sold in some time, and we're lugging them back and forth, and maybe it's just a piece that we're not as happy with as we are with some of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody comes and says, I'll give you $100 for this $120 piece, you know, we're we may be willing to negotiate.
But I feel
again,
that.
It really comes down to...
It's a case-by-case thing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, we've had, I think, maybe two people ask if we were set in our price, mm-hmm. right? And my follow-up question, I don't answer yes or no always. It's just like, okay, well, what's your price? Give me a number. Like, what are you thinking as the customer? What are you offering, right? And if it's a couple of dollars, and then, like, make it $100 instead of $120, in my head, I know how much it cost, right? And I know how much of a profit I've put on that. Mm-hmm. So taking a $20, so I make $20 less profit.
Right.
It's not going to hurt me, whereas, like, the company's going to go bankrupt. We're going under.
Right, right.
We're making $20 less dollars. So, you know, a lot of the time it's a case by case. It's who we're talking to. Like, we've had younger people, they come in and they're just like, oh, I really wanted this. I was going to get this as a gift for so-and-so. And they've asked for, like, a little bit of a discount, like a couple of dollars. I'm not stressing a couple of dollars also. $5? I'm not really stressing mm-hmm. $5. Like, we had a teenage boy come in, and he was looking at a thing, and he was just kind of, like, kind of iffy about the price. And then, like, he ended up buying it, and he's just like, oh, was it, you know, my sister's going to be really happy. He wanted that piece, that very specific piece, as a birthday gift for his sister.
That's cute.
Like, and that was, like, really sweet, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, cases like that, I'm like, I'm not going to stress a couple of dollars. Like, I had one guy who had the audacity.
The audacity.
To say that. He literally had the audacity. It was a $120 piece, and he said that it was out of his price range. So I was just like, okay, well, what is your price range? And he said $40, and I'm like,
excuse me?
Exactly. I was like, well, for your price, for your budget, I can make you a custom order, but it'd be a lot smaller. It'd be like this size. Mm-hmm. And, like, I could just see the look on his face. And I'm in my head, I was sitting there thinking, I really hope my face doesn't show what I'm mm-hmm. thinking right now. Because I was like, that is...
insulting.
It did. Her face absolutely showed.
Did it really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't have a poker face.
I don't have a good poker face either. Apparently, you can read me like a book. I don't know. I don't get it.
Probably because I don't put in the effort to really hide the face most of the time. Like, if I absolutely had to, I guess I could. But I just choose not to. Yeah.
One other thing. What about for selling online promo codes? Either promo codes for returning customers or promo codes for fire sales or promo codes for when you're doing a marketing blitz, do you do anything like that? Do you worry that that's going to cut into your profits, or do you bake that into your prices to make sure that you can offer discounts? You can offer a 10%, 15% discount here or there and still be able to keep your head above water.
Usually, okay, so yes, we do have some promo codes. We don't have a ton, and all of them have some kind of, like, reasoning behind why we have that one. We don't really have, like, a returning customer promo, but every now and then I will put a promo in the Timberdoodle. And usually if I do that, it's because we are trying to do something on our business end. Either we are trying to actually clear out inventory, we need some of this to move, so let's throw it on sale. We know that we're not going to go underwater with a 10% code or a $5 off code, but we also didn't explicitly build it into the price when David was making said things, because we weren't expecting to put them on sale. But, you know, 2 months later, they're still sitting here. Now we need to get them out of here or whatever. So, like, we don't specifically build in the margin in order to have a sale. But I guess it does exist.
We don't. When we have sales, they're almost always coming from our profit margin. And it's always a trade-off for something else. So, like, we have occasionally tried to do like a promo code for somebody promoting our products. They get like a 10% off for the referral code. We can kick them back 5% of that or 5% from the price, and they make some money from promoting us. We make new customers. The trade-off for us there is we'll lose some money, but hopefully we're getting a lifelong customer, because once people burn on our products, they know that they're the best. So like, we'll do that, but we don't, I, Renee makes fun of me sometimes. I hate the like modern customer psychology, like never buy anything on full price because they're always lying to you about what the actual price is, like waiting for sales. Mm. Like, I hate it. I hate the game. There was a period of time where like JCPenney tried to go back to like, listen, it's just what the price is. We're not doing sales anymore because people, like, we think you'll respect the fact that the price is just always lower now. And then, like, they almost went out of business and companies were like, never again.
No, people, customers love to see that sale price. They love it. And the better the sale price is, the more likely they're going to buy it. So, like, it's so stupid.
It goes back to that psychology of they see the word sale, mm-hmm. right? They see the word free. They see the blank for blank, right? They see that, and then just instantly they think they're getting, you know, it's they feel like they're winning something.
Yeah. So I think something's just broken in me, because when I see those sales, like, okay, I love Duluth pants. Duluth sponsorship, that would be great anyway. But when I see that go on sale for, I don't know, whatever, 50% off or something, I don't think they've ever been 50% off. But when I see them go on sale, my brain is not like, oh, I'm getting a great deal because normally they're worth this much. My brain translates that to, they've been ripping me off every time I've ever bought these for full price. Because I know they're not losing money.
You're gonna blow the sponsorship, man.
I know. It's also like Michaels or Hobby Lobby. They always have that 40% off coupon on their app.
So
or
everything
in
their store is 40% overpriced.
Everything in the store is for at least 40% more expensive. Like, squinty eyes. Like, I'm looking at you. I see what you're doing. Mm-mm. It just feels slimy. And we both hate having to play the slimy sales psychology game. We really don't like it. We just want to be able to charge what the price is, but that's not always the best thing for business. If you can build in something that offers a discount or offers a promo or some kind of reward, that's going to be better than just being like, yep, here's my price. Because if you put everything at just the normal price, people go onto your site, they don't see a sale, they don't see a discount, they don't see any kind of incentive to buy. It's just kind of like there and it never changes. Then it's like, eh. But, you know, you have some stuff and then maybe throw this on clearance or have a 24-hour flash sale or whatever. Then all of a sudden it's like, ooh, more of an incentive to buy. I'm going to come back. I want to sign up for the emails. I want to, you know, whatever. Because they don't know really what are you going to do? But I will say the ones that really drive me crazy, that give me that gut feeling of like, ugh, I could have gotten this for so much cheaper, are the handmade watercolors. And there are a couple of brands that do this. And I love that they do it, but I hate that they do it at the same time. Because, like, I love that you're doing a 60% off your entire inventory for Black Friday. But at the same time,
who's doing that? You need to tell that
one. I'll tell you. At least I'm pretty sure it was her who did it 2 years ago. And I was like, yes. And I load it up. But the rest of the year, you know, maybe her stuff's only like 10% off, 20%. And it's like, I would rather just wait for Black Friday and then get everything. And that's the other thing. David is like, if they know that we're doing a big sale for XYZ holiday, they'll just wait for the sale. And there's no incentive to buy between now and the sale.
Not only that, but if you do sales too often, I feel like then people are like, well, we'll just wait. Like, we know they'll get desperate eventually and they'll push to move inventory.
Right. David doesn't like when we do sales. He doesn't really like the promo codes because he's like, I feel like we're devaluing our stuff and people are just going to wait for the sale because they don't want to pay full price. And if you offer it too often, then they'll just come to expect a sale. Mm. And it's like...
That's a very interesting take on
it. Is.
I don't know if I'm right.
This is not business advice because I'm pretty sure I'm wrong. But like, I don't know.
It's just...
It's a perspective. It is a perspective. And it's a view.
It's interesting. So, but I will say, okay, so another sneak peek behind the curtain for like real numbers. I think it was 2 months ago, I offered in the Timberdoodle, another perk of being a Timberdoodle, just $5 off any purchase. And I did not expect a single sale to come out of it because $5 seems so minimal. But I guess it was just, I don't know if it was like the sun and the moon were aligned that day, but we got like 6 or 7 orders and made like $600. Nice. But we only lost 30 or 35, you know, like, so I would rather trade off $35 worth of, you know, discount mm-hmm. and make $600 to $700. And but then again, was it September, I tried a different thing in the Timberdoodle. I did a $10 off $100 purchase or more, not a single sale. So it's like people almost valued the $5 off of anything more so than the $10 off of $100, even though the people with the $5, some of them spent over $100 anyway.
I can understand that psychology.
It was
from a customer's point of view. This is how I would see that.
Okay.
If you give me $5 off of any purchase, right? Let's say I wanted to get some stuff, but when I put it in the cart, it only comes up to like $50, right? Oh, I'm not going to get that free because now I have to spend $100. It's almost like being forced to spend that $100 versus, well, I can spend $5 off of any purchase, no matter how big it is. Ooh, what else can I get and still get that $5? And I'm not forced, quote unquote, to spend $100. For me personally, it's the... I have to spend X amount to get it. Like, what if theoretically I don't have $100? Mm-hmm. Let's say I have in my budget to spend $60 and that's it, right? Like, that's all I have. I can still get a discount. I'll still get a little bit of a discount on that $60 purchase, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't have the extra $40 to spend it. Whereas it's just like, well, no, I have to spend $100. It's like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to wait another time because I'm not going to get that free thing. And then the customer feels gypped.
See, I didn't even think about it that way. I didn't even think about it. I'm like, a lot of these orders spent over $100 anyway. Let me like...
Well, the funny thing about that is that's what happens because it's like, okay, you're going in. It's like Target. You go in for one thing and you buy a whole bunch of other stuff. So it's just like, if didn't have the $100, I'd feel gypped that I didn't get that quote unquote discount or whatever, yeah. because I didn't spend enough money. Like, I feel gypped, but if you give me that $5 off anything, I've already gone in with a certain amount of, okay, I need this amount of stuff for the show that's coming up in like 2 months. So I'm going to order this. Ooh. And then I'm going, because I will go through the website, even though I know I shouldn't, because then it's like Target, because then I add more things to the cart. And then it's just like, okay, now I've got all this stuff in the cart. And then I'm like, but I could really use this. And then I'm thinking of the business side, because I'm like, well, I could buy this, and then I can sell that, and I know those will sell. Well, it ends up being a $150 order. Okay, click. It's a weird psychology.
I didn't even think about it that way.
But like that's how I would. Yeah. That's how I would.
Okay, so
that's how I, as a customer,
that was last. Okay, 2 months ago, and then last month, and then this month. I think last week. I think it's expired now. I did a promo code because we have a ton of Christmas ornaments. Because our Christmas ornaments bombed this year. So, I don't know, man. I don't know, but. So I put a $5 off of any Christmas ornament order, trying to promote the ornaments, get them out of here, offer a little bit of a discount. No one took me up on it. Not a single sale.
I forgot.
It's okay. but no one. And I was like, interesting. Like, maybe people really just aren't. Like, I can't even give you an offer to come buy my Christmas ornaments this year. Like, what the hell, guys? Like, I don't know, man.
That's really interesting because you guys did, like, bananas last year on the ornaments, didn't you?
Yeah. So, I don't have any data to actually prove this, but the only thing that I can think is that it wasn't worth it for people to buy the nice ornaments, have nice ornaments, and maybe they didn't sell. Mm. So now people are stuck with these ornaments. They're like, they didn't sell. I'm not going to buy more.
I don't think that's necessarily it. So for us, at least, we bought ornaments. We sold some of them, but we still have some left. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where we may not buy any this year, but we may have to buy some next year when we run out. Mm. So I don't know if you can, especially since if last year was your first year selling them.
Second year.
It's like second year. Yeah. Well, I mean, you might have had, I don't know if you've had an influx in customers last year that maybe, you know, I think it's one of those things where it'll even out over time, where as people start kind of running out of inventory, you know, you'll start getting more steady purchases. Because we may not buy them this year, but we'll probably need them next year because we sell a lot of ornaments. It's a tough call. It's hard to really come up with it.
It just felt particularly like, what did we do this year? Because for the first 2 years, we were scrambling to make them to custom orders. And so Renee was like, okay, just make like 100 of everything and then we'll have it. And when we get all those orders, we can get them out. We'll stay ahead of the custom orders. We'll have some wiggle room. And so now I spent like 2 weeks making all, and it's just like,
I know. It's like literally we put it out into the universe and we immediately jinxed it by saying that. We're like, oh yeah, let's get ahead of the game. Let's make them. We'll have so many orders. This will be great.
Saying we're so far ahead of the game.
Ready for next year. Hot. See?
You are.
You know what?
But it's like the universe was like, because you're expecting it now, you're not going to get it.
Mm-mm. But you know what? I will say this. In terms of that problem, that's not necessarily, well, perspective, of course, but it's not necessarily the worst problem to have, because what I found is like when we started, I was stressing a lot of, well, I have to make inventory for this coming show. I have to make more inventory. And I was stressing the quantity of inventory. But then when we come home with a lot of inventory, and it occurred to me, well, but that just means I don't necessarily have to make more for the next show. I don't have to stress it. I can make maybe a handful of things for the next show or for this particular show. Like, we have a ton of Halloween stuff, which is great because now I don't have to stress making an entire Halloween series, if you will. I've got tons. If I get to making the couple of pieces that I want to make this year, super. If I don't, that's fine too, right? It's like, that's how I'm choosing to think about it. Otherwise, I'm going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. But that's how you can think about with the ornaments.
See, but now that we have thought about it and put that into the universe, next year we're not going to get any ornament orders either.
See, I disagree. I think you're putting positive energy in preparation for the next year.
I'm a little pessimistic. I'm squinting. I'm suspicious of the universe.
Go ahead and be squinty-eyed. We'll be the optimist one.
I need Renee to stop talking about what the universe is or is not going to do. take your hands off the universe fate button, please.
I just feel like the universe is against me sometimes. Like, honestly.
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like maybe we offended the universe and the universe was like, ye shall be cursed with no orders. Ye shall be broke.
Can I ask a non-existential question?
Yeah,
go ahead. Okay. Do you guys ever consider, like, hiring a marketing team? Like, hiring a...
Okay. Oh. This is going to be a whole nother episode.
You set her off.
You need to be clean.
Do we need to table this for another episode?
This could be a whole nother episode, but to answer your question relatively briefly, we don't have the money to do so. Right now, I would absolutely love to hire out my socials, to hire out my emails. I would love it. We don't have the money to do it. And I know that the psychology of that is like, well, if you upfront the money, think of it as an investment, like say you're going to invest in this hiree for 6 months, maybe you'll see the payback. But like,
it's that
maybe. Really, yeah, it's that maybe. It's the taking the risk. It's like, I just don't have it. And I guess I could find it. I mean, I guess we could pull it out of savings or personal savings, but like, it's a risk that we are not willing to take. Mm-hmm. But the possibility is also the reverse. The possibility is we take the risk and it is so worth it. And that is the thing that makes our business boom. But I don't know that. And we have hired out help for our Pinterest before, and we didn't see anything there. We tried that for a year. We had invested in a business coaching program for 3 months. That was $7,000, and we just finished paying that off this year.
And it was
Just a question: was that worth it? Like, what you learned, was it worth it? Kind of.
I would say we wanted a longer term, and this is maybe just because of the way we paid for it, but we've been paying for this for
15 months,
for like 20 months. And so we want, like, every month I have to write a check, but like my ability to keep asking you questions and for guidance ended like 8 months ago. And like, that feels bad.
It was a 3 month intensive business boosting program, and it was a lot of information, but I feel like the support did not continue past the 3 months, because there's only so much I can implement and change in my business in 3 months, and I'm trying to implement all these new strategies and do these things and plan my socials and do this and do that and do this and do that, and I still have questions about things. What would you do? Hey, business coach, this is my situation right now. What do you think? Like, but she didn't offer that kind of she always says my DMs are open, you can always, but there's only so much that she will talk with you about or really answer your question unless you pay for it. And one of the things that this coach was offering was like a 1 hour intensive phone call, one-on-one coaching with me, $600 for a 1 hour. And David was like, our lawyer isn't even that expensive. Like, where the hell are we supposed to get $600? Like, no, I don't have it. We're still paying off the program. Like, you know,
this could be an entirely different episode. We're going to table the rest of this for a different episode, because I've got thoughts about that too.
So like, a lot. We really did. And we learned a lot that I probably would not have learned on my own. So there is that. Mm-hmm. And it was really good in a lot of different ways. But me being me, I'm a worrier. I'm looking at our finances this year. 2024 has sucked financially. I'm like, to me, the thought of it, that wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. I wasted the money. I'm a failure. Like, all of that psychology comes into mind, because I'm thinking, I just spent $7,000 out of our pocketbook for a program that I truly believed in was going to be it for our business. And we are still scraping the bottom of the barrel. Where is the return? I made a mistake. I wasted our money, or I internalize it as like, I'm not good enough. I'm at fault for not internalizing these strategies. I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing it good. And like, that happens like every 2 or 3 months. I have like my existential crisis where it's like,
David's got to talk you off that.
Correct. Because I'm like ready to burn the business down, and I'm like having a mental breakdown. I'm looking at jobs on my phone, jobs near me. Oh my God, I have to go back to the corporate world. I'm not built for this. I'd rather just die. Like, oh my God. And David is like, chill, calm. Let's. That is not the reality here. Like, these are big feelings. Like, you need to go to bed. It's 2 a.m., you know? And like, so,
you know what?
Oh my gosh.
I 1000% feel you, because I can't even tell you how many times I've said to Ryan, you know, I was thinking maybe it's time for me to go back to work.
Yep, we were
maybe,
just
maybe,
having
maybe this... I have to get a job out of the house. Yep. And then he looks at me. And I'm always driving when I say this, because this is when we have our long
talks. Oh,
yeah. Car
ride
driving.
Talks are the best.
Because my mind just starts going, and then he... So my mind will start going, and I will start talking to Brian about stuff. And I've said to him, I was like, oh, my God. You know, I'm thinking about finances and all this other stuff. And he looks at me, and he goes, but would you be happy doing that?
Right.
And I'm like, no, I'd hate it. And he's like, okay. I'm like, that's kind of sort of where the conversation goes. And he like talks me off the ledge with like two sentences.
I know. See, but the difference is Brian is still working full time and David does not have it. Like, this is our full time thing. And so we don't have that extra salary coming in. We are literally living off of savings right now in order to try to make this crazy dream happen. And it's just like not happening for us. So like, we've talked about it. We're like, and David, bless his heart, he's always like, I'm going to go back to work full time. Like, there is no we. Like, you might go get a part time, but like, I'm going back full. And I'm like, I can't have that. I'm a capable ass woman. I got a STEM degree. Like, I can't. What? Like, no. But it always comes down to this, but will you be happy doing that? Will it ruin your mental health? Will you absolutely decline?
I saw you when you had to get up and go to work every morning, and I, like, I don't want to deal with that. Like,
I don't want to deal with it either.
That's not who I married.
Which is why I really do. It just, it can get really bad, and I can get into a really dark place with some of that existential work job shit really quickly.
This was supposed to be the non-existential question.
I know,
about
hiring a marketing team. It sounds great, but I don't have the money for it, and I don't trust that my business will see the return from it. And that's just not something that I'm willing to risk right now.
That is my thing.
We have a guy who's been courting us.
He's trying to woo you.
Well, the thing is, he's actually a customer of ours. Mm-hmm. We met him at a market about 2 years ago, and he just happens, him and his wife just go to a lot of markets in the area. And every time they do, they stop by our booth and they always buy something. And every time they do, he stops and he talks to me. He's like, so are you thinking about investing in social media, marketing?
I would cry every time I see this man. I hate that confrontation. I'd be like, no, stop asking me.
I will say he's not... there's the annoying, like, listen, get the F out of my face or I'm going to F and knock you out. There's that kind of pushy person. And then there's conversation. Like, I like him. I think him and his wife are freaking hilarious to me. Like... they asked me if I could do something, and I was just like, I know that it's copyright. And I was like, no. And they were like, oh. And I was just like...
For our non-visual audience, Zona was doing air quotes when she said no.
Like, no, winky face.
Exactly. And I mean, so they were cracking up. And I mean, they're just a bowl of laughs. They really are. And every time they come by, and I remember the first time they came by our booth, and I was like, I know you, but I cannot place you to save my life. And he was just like, map. And I'm like, yes! He was like, you know, I love it. It's hanging up on my wall. I stare at it every day. And like, every time he sees us, he's like, I saw that your name was going to be here and we were hunting you down. Like, he's that guy.
That's great.
But he does work in marketing, and he's mentioned it in the last, like, earlier this year, Brian and I had a serious conversation about whether we were going to do it. And he was cutting the price. But it was still...
it's too steep for us.
Yeah. It was still...
Those
it was just like...
services are so expensive.
And it's...
we're all saying the same thing.
You pay them... yeah. It's like rent. You pay them whether you're making money or not.
Right.
And, like, that's brutal.
Hoping that you see the return. Hoping that you see... like, I'm tired of this false hope, man.
I guess for me also, like, for us, it was, okay, well, we have X amount left in our business account. And if we do that, that's a really, really big chunk of what's left in our account, and we still have, like, guaranteed stuff that we have to pay for. We have the markets that we got to pay for. We've got those fees. We've got, you know, a product that we might have to get. We have to leave ourselves buffer room in case there's a special order and we need to get certain pieces or whatever. You know, there's still expenses that we need to buy. Like, if I need to get a new pen, a new burner, not a burner, but like a new pen for my burner, which is like the bread and butter right. of the job, you know, like I have to be able to afford that. And it's just like, well, okay, that chunk of money can pay for this things. And those are guaranteed things that we have to pay mm-hmm. for, guaranteed things that we're more than likely going to get money back on, right? Like when we talk about markets, it's we're paying a fee and we're hoping that we're going to get that return. And we can almost guarantee that we're going to make something back off of it, regardless if it's just a break-even point or not, or more. But those are guaranteed things that we have to spend the money on. Whereas with marketing, it's we have, like you said, we have to pay that bill every month. But is it helping?
Right.
Is it yeah. doing what we need it to be? And like he gave us numbers, and it's like, it was very salesperson-y, very car salesperson-y, and it's like,
No, it was just, it's not in the cards for us right now. Yeah. We've been doing a little bit of investment in our own social media marketing. I've been doing a lot of personal time investment into our online presence, but right now we don't have the money. And I get it, you have to spend money to make money, right? That's what they say. That's the mantra. But you have to have money to spend money. So
if you don't have the money, you don't have the money.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you just do what you right. can with what you got.
So any closing thoughts on pricing?
Oh, one thing we didn't talk about was, and I think this is an important thing to talk about really quickly, is the pricing what you think it's worth versus what you should actually price it, right? Because that was something from earlier in the conversation. Yeah. And I think that's a dangerous thing.
Well, yeah,
I think that you are not your own customer. Setting yourself up for it. Right. Well,
I'm not
my own customer.
Yeah. We're not spending thousands of dollars on art. The art that we're buying doesn't have commas in it.
You're right. Oh, by the way, David, I've been saying that a lot, mm-hmm. that my goal, he's asked me what my goal is for the business. Like, what does it take for me to say I'm successful, air quotes, right? And I said, I want to charge a price with commas in it, and I want them to come to me for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want the customer to come to me and hunt me down for a piece of work, and when I say this price and it's got a comma or two in it, or two, right? I want them to be like, okay, cool.
Okay, cool.
Done.
Amazing. Right. Two commas. I'm banking on two commas.
I want two commas, damn it. But like, but that's the goal.
Yeah.
That is my, like, I was like, that, you know what? God damn it, that is the goal.
That is the goal.
Like,
yeah.
That is the goal for me. But in terms of I am not my own customer, I think it depends on where you're at, like what market or what show you're doing, right? Yeah. Like if you're talking a market, I might be my own customer, so to speak, right? But if I'm at a fine arts, show, no, I'm probably not my own customer because I
don't have that money.
I can't afford to spend this price that's almost got a comma in it. So there's that. But I think even if you're at a smaller market, right, at a product market, if you will, you're not always your own customer. And I think that I've seen some people price their work, and I'm like, no offense to you, but are you sure that this is the price you want to be spending? Like, I said it to Jessica, who's a great friend of ours, and I was just like, girlfriend, you are so undervaluing yourself right now. And she's like, really? I think it's too much. I was like, I'm going to vomit on you right now, because this piece that you're selling for $35, I can guarantee you is probably at least $75 to $100. With the wood, with the art that you've put on it, because it is a form of art, and then like the finishing and everything else that you've done to it, it's worth at least 75. Mm-hmm. She's like, really? That's too much. I'm like, no.
It's this whole concept. It could be another episode as well. But like, for me, realizing what the value should be and what I thought it was based on my own calculations in my head, it really came down to me actually getting out of my own head and getting out of my own world and being at art shows and seeing everybody else's prices. Because once you step out of your own little bubble, mm-hmm. and like you go to a festival and this person on your left is selling pieces that have a comma in it and they're $3,000, and then the person on your right is selling pieces, sculptures that are hundreds of dollars. I'm looking at my handmade thing that's beautiful and took me 8 hours to make that has $100 price tag on it, and I'm like, I'm gonna rip that price tag off and scratch it out and make it say 400, because holy shit, like I'm between these people, like whoa, this is what it's actually worth in the market, and this is what people are buying. Like, it is eye-opening. It is wild. Yeah.
It's wild.
It's wild.
That moment came for me when I had a customer reverse haggle.
Yeah. Us. You've talked about that before.
That moment. And for those who didn't hear that particular story, I had a set of pictures, and she asked the price, we gave her a price, and she said, I'm going to reverse haggle you. And she gave us a price that was actually more than what we had quoted her. And she was just like, the price you gave me is not what it's worth. This is the price.
Willing to pay more for it.
I think it's worth it.
Take my money.
Exactly. And that was just like, that was the epiphany for me of, exactly, of,
whoa.
Yes, goddamn.
Yes.
It.
Yes.
Snaps.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That's when I stopped thinking about what I would pay for right. this and what it's actually worth. But I think also at the same time that you have to be cognizant of other things when you're pricing your stuff, right? There's the fine art pricing and then there's the product pricing.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're, to be honest, like if you're spending $2 on a blank, right, for something, and even if you put art onto it, your art onto it, can you really justify charging $100 for this item?
Sure. Yeah.
It's kind of like, there's a balance. I know, because, right? Because it's like, okay, well, the art is great, but the canvas itself is not.
The item is XYZ.
Right. Exactly. It's not the quality isn't enough to justify $100 price tag. That's how I see. So I'm like, well, you have to, that's the balance. It's like, am I going to charge that kind of money? Whereas like, I don't think anybody's going to look at it and be like, okay, I'll spend $100 on this item that doesn't even feel like it's worth $50. Right. So it's that balance.
That was partly why we started making all of our own wood, because you can't charge fine art prices on
trash
wood.
Dollar store wood. I mean, dollar store wood is great for practicing.
It has its own.
It's great for when.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. When you're doing your first market and you want to just make a couple of pieces to put up for sale, it's super. And I mean, if you want to keep some low price items on the on your table, so that you know somebody who doesn't have a substantial amount of money to spend on things can still buy something, it's a great option.
Sure.
But you can't, like you said, it's not something that you can charge hundreds of dollars for.
I mean, it offers you the ability to just kind of like practice on something, because I'm sorry, if I'm going to try a new technique, I'm not burning onto that $40.
Don't burn it on our wood.
Piece of beautiful canvas. Exactly.
Save the nice stuff.
Exactly. I'm going to burn it on some, you know,
some trash.
A piece of wood or
Renee
something.
Renee doesn't represent the accountant viewpoint of our business. Please practice on our wood so you have to buy more.
Oh. If you're going to practice on our wood, get a scrap box and then practice on the scraps.
Well, that is also a good point. But it's just kind of like, well, you can. Like, if I'm going to try something new, I'll try it on something that didn't cost me that much money. Especially when I'm looking at the wood that I buy from you guys. I already have something going on in my head of what it's going to be. And I'm looking at it going, Yeah, I'm charging that fine art price. I'm not charging the cheapy price, right? So it, to me, it's got to look valuable. It's got to feel valuable, which is why I wouldn't put something beautiful on a beautiful piece of wood and then charge nothing for it. But that's why, like, dollar store stuff is really great for that practice thing, and it's also great to just, like, do something cheap and may put something in a more affordable price range on the table for somebody.
I'm going to angle for the assistant producer role here and say that we do have to wrap this up. Oh, Brian says no. Yes. This is why I'm the assistant.
No, we're good. We're good.
We're at an hour and 35 minutes.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think we offered our closing thoughts. Do you guys have any plugs?
The Timberdoodle Retreat.
Timberdoodle Retreat.
Yes, Timberdoodle Retreat.
We got another person who signed up. She's so excited.
Yes.
Nice. I know.
You should sign up soon because I'm going to be putting a deposit down on the house soon. So the sooner you sign up, the better.
Well, yeah, if we don't get any more signups relatively soon, then we're going to book the smaller house. But if we get more signups, then we'll book the larger house. So that's how that's going to shake out.
Yep.
Awesome. I did want to plug our website because last month I decided it was time for a complete refresh of our website, and I completely redesigned it, and I refreshed all of the content on there. I've added a whole bunch of new sections for some of the different programs that we're involved in, and I'm really happy with the outcome and what it looks like. So I am highly encouraging people to go check out the site, check out some of Zona's products. We've started marketing some of the jewelry as collections on there so that people can see some of the new stuff that she's been working on. And I am very excited about it. So, bzfurfur.com.
It looks great.
Thank you.
Very happy with
it.
So, with that, I'll close us out. So, this was another fine episode of Pyro Toasty Talks. Thank you to David and Renee of It's David and Renee. If you want to follow them on Instagram, you can find them at It's David and Renee. Zona and I are BZFurfur at _BZFurfur on the socials. You can also find Pyro Toasty Talks at Pyro Toasty Talks. Check out the website, pyrotoastytalks.com, where we have links to the feed and links to buy t-shirts.
Oh!
T-shirts.
So go buy yourself some sweet, sweet Pyro Toasty Talks attire. Some merch, and wear them on the Timberdoodles retreat.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And as always, stay toasty.
Stay toasty.